Hi, it's Diane, and it is Thursday, March 23rd. I'm here with the 8 p.m. group. So far, we have Pat, Carolyn, and Tammy. Who wants to start us with check-ins and celebrations?
This is Pat. I'll go first. It just takes me a minute to think. I have a son who's 10 with ADHD, and so he's in fifth grade. But he's always had an issue with not getting enough play time and having too much homework and always complaining. But my husband recognized, I think it was last night or one night this week, he'd had a lot of work, and he focused. He got his work done, and somehow the night ended, and he didn't get any FaceTime. And he made a statement of, gosh, I had a lot of work today, and I didn't get any FaceTime. But there was no outburst. There was no crying. So that was a major win that somehow we made it through the day, and he recognized he had work to do and that he couldn't get his FaceTime, but he didn't lose it. So that was positive for us.
Yeah, well, and how did you respond when he made the comment?
Well, I kind of remember it happening, but I think my husband kind of commented back of, yeah, that's right, and that's, I think he praised him of saying, yeah, that's good, you recognized it, and that happens sometimes, but that's good that you did it, so.
Awesome. Great. Who's next?
This is Tammy. I was just moving. My son, my 13-year-old, had a really difficult morning this morning. It was really difficult. And he got to school a half hour late, but he got to school. And he had a good day at school. And anyway, the night ended well. He came home and ate, and he said, you know, Mom, he said, I was just really tired, and I'm sorry I said those things. Anyway, he apologized, and we moved on. And I, you know, talked to him after about, you know, maybe finding a different way to handle it when he's tired, you know. And, so anyway, it ended really well.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. That's great. What do you think made a difference for him in terms of the shift from the morning to the school day?
Well, there was going to be a couple things we were going to do. We were going to order some new shoes and a couple little things like that after school. And he was going to go on the computer, which he didn't get to do when he got home. And so he kind of had to lay with that. And then he just wanted to make sure that I still loved him and everything. And then after that, after he apologized, you know, he was kind of looking for some different ways to handle it when he's tired in the morning. And we came up with a couple of things together. So that was great. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Caroline.
Holy moly. I did really good on my job interview last week. This is huge because I've never done well on interviews before, but I had been preparing for a long time. And I actually prepared correctly. But it did let me know how in the past I could have never helped my children with that because I couldn't do it myself. And it's a lot more effort than I thought. But, boy, what a difference when you walk in and you've prepared, not that you're perfect or anything, but
there's part of it. There's that confidence piece of it, and then there's what it sounds like you're also celebrating is that you learned something out of the process.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the thing that was so wonderful was instead of thinking about what I thought they wanted me to say or whatever. Like, I didn't have any energy for that because I needed to say, well, this is what I do. And then I had heard this wonderful thing on, like, public radio. And it was a person talking about the difference between confidence and competence. Could you hear what I said?
Yes, competence.
And it was so wonderful because they talked so much about, you know, that we are a society that values confidence when, in fact, what we really want is competence. And sometimes the people who act most confident have skipped gaining the competence. And I so that was one of the things that I was able to say as I kind of patched it, you know, described how the different parts of my career and life really, really do come together on things. But a competent person will not be confident that they can solve the problem. They'll be busy solving it.
Yeah.
Instead of making you feel better that, you know,
so it
what I mean?
Sounds like you had a great, you had a great job interview and you're feeling like you left with a learning opportunity, and awesome, Cameron. We're celebrating with you. That's great.
And I think, like you say, if mama feels good, then, or if mama doesn't feel good, then everything goes bad. But I have to work on my own confidence or, you know, being able to express myself. And then that's really important. And it helps everything.
That makes perfect sense. All right. So let's move back around. Pat, where do you want to take aim tonight?
Did you say Pat?
I did. Sorry,
oh.
Pat.
What I want to take aim on?
Yes, ma'am.
My son just came in, so I had to run him out. I want to, and I don't know how to word this, but my son is not doing well in math, and I don't think he quite gets it. And I want him to understand that it's important for him to try harder in his math.
So is it that you're looking for some buy-in or some motivation? Is that around getting more engaged in math class? Is that what you're doing, Pat?
Well, I mean, we're to the point where we're doing extra tutoring, and I need him to buy in, not just do it, but to buy in, and his teachers are looking for some extra effort from him. And, yeah, I need him to buy in. I don't know if he'll be motivated, but to buy in, to understand that he needs to do this, and it's important.
Okay. So I'm going to suggest that while I'm looping around with Tammy and Carolyn, that with all of these, I don't know kind of how Jeremy typically does this, but, you know, that next step is to get curious. And so I'm going to kind of plant the seed about getting curious about what's going on with him that's making it hard for him to engage and currently have buy-in in math class. So I'll loop back around with you on that, okay?
Okay.
Tammy, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
I want to take aim. Well, it's probably more on myself than him. And he is just the 13-year-old. He is, he just got one of his medications increased per night for sleeping. And so he's just adjusting to it still in the morning, which I understand. But having said that, he can become very nasty with the things he says. And at the beginning of his nastiness, I'm okay. you know, bleed and all of that, and that can kind of thing. But he obviously he knows me very well, you know, and he knows exactly. Well, I shouldn't say that. He knows some of the things to say to me to really egg me on. So I think I have to, and this has been happening over a couple of, you know, probably a week and a half with a couple of different things, different situations, going places that he doesn't want to go, things like that. And, you know, he'll just, you know, try and egg me on, which, you know, I have to not let him do.
So it sounds like you want to take aim on how you react when he pushes your button. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I have to be more astute about it because it used to be where it was only like one or two things he'd say and then we'd move on and I would be okay. It kind of had that down pat. And now he just, he can kind of keep it going and, you know, it kind of wears on me, especially if it's something that really bothers me. So I have to work on that. And
well, so is it about, so Tammy, is it about your resilience or is it about kind of how you react when he pushes your buttons? I can't tell.
I think he catches me off guard is what I think. Used to be if I said one or two things, he would stop, and that would be the end of it, and we could move along. And now he kind of keeps it going if he really doesn't want to do something. And I have to keep moving along instead of being egged on.
Okay. Cool. That makes sense. Carolyn, mm-hmm. What about you? Where do you want to take aim? I think you're on mute. I don't know if you can take yourself off or you need me to. So she's got it.
Look at that. I just did it. Yes, I'm unmuted now. But I would like to take aim on taking aim. I have to, the things that I'm not succeeding at, it's because there's too many of them. And I'm not picking one. So that's...
I love that. That's perfect. Yeah, it is. So you want to take aim on taking aim because you're trying to do too much. Is it feeling overwhelming or is it fizzling out? What are you noticing?
The specific issue that I'm having with it is that if I'm not clearly able to describe the problem or how I can, what kind of help I would appreciate, I don't get any help. And then it takes me longer, and then I get more frustrated, et cetera. And it's not about am I slow or anything like that. It's more I have to whittle down and pick one. And then
it's not about clearly articulating one that you've picked. It's about narrowing it down so you can just choose one. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes. I'm getting really good at being clear, but that means I have to sort through and prioritize.
Yes.
To which things we'll do together. Which things will be really helpful to have help, and which things, quite frankly, it's easier to just do it and get it done.
Yeah. So, Carolyn, prioritization is an executive function challenge, and I know a lot of us either have our own attention issues or we're so overwhelmed and anxious as parents that we end up with some attention issues. How much of this is an executive function challenge for you?
Ordinarily, I would say that's what it is, but I've just been improving so much. I am on medications. I'm working with a social functions counselor myself. Quite frankly, it's really a lot going on.
It's just literally the volume.
The sheer volume and the sheer complexity of the volume, the good news is I'm still working to, everything's getting done, and we're all still working together. It's, you know, after the death of an aunt, we're cleaning out the house and the job interview, and my daughter just got her learner's permit and stuff. So everything's good. It's just a ton, and a ton of stuff, et cetera. So, but it still, I think I should be able to ask for more help. But the reality is I have to pare down to things that, you know, not do stuff that even I think is important.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right. So tonight we're on page 46 of the workbook, and we are talking about motivation and buy-in specifically. And I love this topic because when I go back to kind of my own story with my kids, I think that understanding the role that motivation plays in supporting executive function has just been such a huge aha for me as an adult without executive function issues, or at least my kids don't think I do. My kids think I have executive function issues, but I don't think I do. But it's just, you know, that moment when I realized that the ADHD brain or a kid with anxiety doesn't have a just get it done button was just such an important piece of it, because I'm just one of those people that just like buckles down and makes sure things happen, even if I don't care or I'm not interested. And the reality is that for a lot of our kids, their brain just doesn't work that way. And so as we're talking about motivation and buy-in, motivation specifically, there's five areas that we talk about in terms of motivation. And I'm going to talk about a sixth unofficially. But the five things here we have are novelty, competition, urgency, interest, and play or creativity. And I think that with our kids, you guys have kids that are kind of in that middle age group, particularly Pat and Tammy, and part of this is figuring out how to talk to our kids about the role that motivation plays, because I think that they're at the stage where if they understand, wow, if I find a way to motivate my brain, I'm going to be much more likely to be successful in accomplishing what I want or what my teacher wants or what my parents want. So a couple things on a few of these. Number one is on competition. Some kids love competition. My kids used to love, okay, how many math problems can you do in the next 10 minutes? Or let's see who can get upstairs and get their shoes and socks and come back down first. And whoever gets to the car on time can pick the radio station and a lot of that sort of thing. But kids with anxiety, particularly, and some other kids as well, sometimes that competition strikes a less favorable nerve with them, and so it can make it very difficult. The other one I want to kind of talk a little bit more about is urgency, and I think this is one of the ones we tend to default to, I think especially as adults, and our kids do it too, where it's like they wait to the last minute and something, and the deadline is what makes it a motivation. And the challenge with this is that for a lot of us, what happens when we have a deadline is it throws us into the threat cycle, and we end up in that fight or flight sort of thing going on, and that's really what's motivating us, is that we end up in the amygdala, you know, just like we do when we get triggered or angry or you know, or overwhelmed, and we're operating from that more primal, I've got to fix this, this has to change, this can't be happening, sort of intense place, which is effective but not sustainable. If we use urgency all the time, it wears us out. Sometimes even with our kids, it loses its effectiveness after a while. And as adults, I can't tell you how many, you know, parents that I've coached that used urgency or other kind of beating yourself up sorts of motivations to get their brain going, and they're just exhausted and burned out and don't know what else to do to kind of help themselves to be successful. And so it's while it works sometimes, it can be very difficult. And I guess I would say the same thing about some of the more, I guess we call them fear-based motivators. So a lot of times when I'm having this conversation with a parent, and they'll say, well, I don't want to yell at my kid, but yelling works. Yelling is a motivator. Getting angry, punishing can be a motivator. You know, if you threaten to take, I do this with my kids when I get triggered, it's like I'm taking away your Xbox for the rest of your life, right? And when they hear that, it's like, oh, wait, this is an emergency. I've got to change my behavior. And so it's that same sort of fear-based, urgency-based motivation. And again, it's not sustainable, and it wears everybody out, and it's just exhausting and no fun. So I think that a couple of other important pieces here are, you know, one is that as we're talking about motivation, we want to make sure that the motivation is significant and timely. I know we were talking in the group on Wednesday, I think it was, we were talking about how we've got a lot of teenagers in that group, and they want to do well in school. They want to get good grades in school because they want to go on to college after high school or whatever the kind of after goal is. And what we realized very quickly is that the motivation to do well in school, which is pretty far away, if you think about it, even just getting to the end of the semester is pretty far away for our kids, is a difficult motivation. What you're really trying to do is to create a motivation for remembering, helping the brain to remember to turn in the assignment tomorrow morning. So you've got to have a motivation that's more timely than, well, if you get this turned in, then you'll get a good grade in your class, and if you get a good grade in your class and all your other classes, then you can graduate. You know, it's like all of these things that are so far away. And our kids really have two time zones. They have now, and they have not now. And so if the motivation is needed for something that has to happen in the now time frame, and we're trying to motivate with something that's not now, if that makes sense, it makes it much more difficult. The other thing that you know, it talks about here on the page is that ultimately we want to find ways for our kids to begin to motivate themselves. And this is going to be different for every kid, depending on their developmental age, depending on what the motivation is. But one of the things I always suggest is that if you're working on the area of motivation is that you find things that your kids are motivated to change. If you're trying to figure out what to take aim on, for example, Carolyn, finding something that your child is motivated to change as well as you are motivated to change can be a great place to start. It's much easier to find motivation. It's much easier to have that motivation be more internal than external. And it can often get to a quick success, which will give you an opportunity to kind of move on to something that maybe your kid has less buy-in or less motivation on. Buy-in is the other component of this, and it's about kind of really, as our kids mature and as they really begin to internally motivate, what's critical is that they have some kind of sense of ownership and responsibility. Sometimes when they're younger, that buy-in comes because they want to do what the right thing is, or they want to do what mom or dad or the teachers say that they should do. But as our kids get older, it's harder to do that. And so finding ways to collaborate and get buy-in, sometimes even with external motivators, can be very helpful. But both of these pieces are really critical in terms of moving situations and changing behaviors. So I'm curious what comes up for all of you guys under this topic of motivation and buy-in.
It's Carolyn, and what's hit me over the face or head or whatever is if I can't give myself enough time to prioritize, then I'm certainly not leaving enough time to talk it over to find out what kind of buy-in. Do you know what I mean? That there's no thought process on that. It fails because you can't help if you don't even know what I'm talking about. And I'm
So part of what you need to build in time for is not just to get it all prioritized. You also have to build in time to get the buy-in and to figure out, is there a motivation there, is there not, that sort of piece of it. And so if you know you're short on time even to prioritize, your ability to build in that buy-in piece is going to be even more limited. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and that I could also use that as a criteria for what are the things that I'll do, that I will ask for help with, or that I will work together. Like if there's already buy-in or it is something that is a mutual goal, then I won't be trying to pull teeth while I'm close to being overwhelmed. In other words, I could pick things that already have some buy-in and then say that's good enough, you know.
So give me an example of three things, Carolyn, where you think you might have some buy-in.
Right now, with my daughter was driving, I don't feel like driving forever, and but driving is something she wants to do, so it can, okay, let's go. Let's go do errands. And so that makes it a lot more fun because she's driving and she's thinking and she's not being dragged around by me.
Okay.
And then
anything else that comes to mind?
It's really more of the things that are happening that need to happen around the house, such as because the kids are older, you know, as well as my husband taking over the family manager role, if you don't put your information about when you need a ride in the calendar, then nobody knows that you need it. So that is already changed. That has been changing very much to a joint problem that we solve together. But then there are other things that, like, going through my aunt's gazillion papers, every letter, you know what? It's easier to just do that by myself. Because I know, because you can't describe to somebody what it is that has to happen, not without a lot of explanation. It's like it's easier to just kind of do it myself. So, step three. Anyways.
Yeah, it is. So what you're uncovering is finding those places, and I think that that's why I kind of challenge you. It doesn't matter what the three are, but it's kind of how hard is it to find things for you where you're clear that there's some motivation on their part, and it sounds like it's pretty easy.
Well, I think again, for me, the main thing is prioritizing. Or at least whittling down to what a human being can do. So that what I used to do is I used to figure if I just work harder or try harder, I would always be able to get everything. And so therefore, all I need to do is just ask you for a little help or whatever, and then I'll, you know, still get it all done, but that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I've asked you after I've already started because I didn't have time to get buy-in. So
it's got to kind of fit in the right order is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Good.
And so
like
sometimes
that.
Up front, and you guys have been helping me with this for a long time, but it means actually being up front and saying no, I can't do everything, nor can anybody, but these are what my priorities are right now. How can we work together? Or
yeah.
I hope you do find somebody that can help you with that.
Great, great. Kat or Tammy, what's coming up for you guys?
What's coming up for me is the motivation part for him now is you know, to work towards something. We've been using that one for a little bit. But now what's happening now is that the impulsivity and the motivation, if time's gotten all mixed up or all mixed together.
Tell me what that means. He's really impulsive about what he's like, oh, I've got to have this, and he gets really impulsive about that thing that he's motivated about. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes. Like, you know, like every day it's like, well, we'll have a goal set, right? And then he'll be like, okay, I figured out how to get this right now, you know, and I'll say, no, that wasn't the plan, you know, and then everything kind of, and then he'll say, well, I'll just sell this thing to this kid, and I'll sell this thing to this kid, and then I'll have money to do it myself. And I'll be like, no, that wasn't the plan, you know. And
so you pick a reward, and then he gets hyper focused on the reward,
exactly.
And so he wants to push to. Okay, so
yes.
So I guess the question is there some interim? Is there an interim motivation that you could put in place that might keep the pressure on, or is it about just designing with him and making a deal that if you're, you know, if something's a reward, that there's that, you know, that it's going to be this is going to be the way that you're going to focus on the reward. I mean, I guess the question is how well does he understand that the purpose of doing this is to help his brain to better focus?
Yeah, I don't think he understands that very well. I think he did at the beginning, and now he's just getting so, he just puts so much effort into school. I mean, just to get through the day is a huge, huge for him. I mean, it's just a huge accomplishment for him. And I think he just gets so tuned in on getting the reward when he gets home, you know, like, okay, now I've, you know, I've done all this and I had a really good day and I didn't get in trouble, you know, any of that. And, you know, now I figured out how I can get the reward today. I can sell this.
Well, so I'm wondering, it sounds like he almost wants to have some kind of celebration after school, Tammy, just kind of celebrating, kind of getting through it. And I'm wondering whether, you know, you could do a celebration without a reward or a reward without a celebration. I mean, I don't know kind of how to split them out, but, you know, is there some other form of positivity that would feed him equally as a more of a monetary reward?
What I have just started doing is meeting him on the way home from school so he can walk home by himself. But, I mean,
right.
I have to see him. So as long as I see him, he can walk home by himself. Or he can choose to come with me to pick up his little brother. And he has that choice. So I thought that was a pretty big step, you know. And he liked that. He thought that was huge. And I've tried to have little things for him when he gets home. I think he just gets so hyper-focused into, you know, trying to keep up with, maybe trying to keep up with the other kids.
Managing hyper-focus is really hard. And so I think that particularly with us, so especially with those big, giant rewards, they get really excited. And it's like, yes, my son just went and sold something the other day so he could buy something. And it was the same sort of thing. It's like, well, I thought you were working towards that. I couldn't wait. I had to, you know, I had to go get it.
Right. I'll lock
the
door
in company.
He'll like, oh yeah, I'm selling this to the, and I said, listen, is it, if you choose to sell that, you're not getting another one. I mean, you know, so that kind of put the brakes on that, you know, like it wasn't a, you know, an open door for him to say, well, if I sell this and get what I want, then I can just get another one. Well, you know, so it kind of, we put the brakes on that real quick and that seemed to help. But
there
he just gets all anxious about it.
Yeah.
Kind of
so part of this, I guess, that's coming up for me, Tammy, as you're talking, is kind of the role of really educating our kids about the role that motivation plays. And I don't know if I said this earlier, but it's kind of like, I remember very distinctly my son, the first time we kind of had this aha, and he was, I may have told this story before, but you know, he had like one of those 50-problem math assignments, and we divided it across two nights. And the first night he got the homework done in 30 minutes, and the second night, it took like 2.5 hours. It was one of those kind of drudgerous sort of, how are you getting through this kind of nights? And afterwards, I was like, buddy, what's going on? And he says, well, Mom, my show was on yesterday. And so it was easier to get done. And it was a great conversation to have about the role that motivation played in helping him to get his brain to engage and to be able to follow through. And it really opened the door to lots of conversations about how do you want to motivate your brain, as opposed to, you know, me going, okay, what am I going to do to motivate my son? And so I think that that's an important kind of next stage for all of us to begin to think about as our kids get into that middle school age, particularly, is, you know, how are we educating them about the role that motivation plays in helping their brain, and how do we set them up to be more in the driver's seat with motivation, and being the one to choose what's my motivation and how do I want to make this, how do I want to motivate my brain? So I don't know how, what's coming up for you guys as I say that.
So teaching him to try and keep him on the pathway to
find opportunities to have him see the role that motivation plays, you know, so just kind of even being the tool of being a mirror. And so when you see that, hey, when this motivation was in place, this worked really well. When this motivation wasn't in place, I noticed that you were having a harder time. What do you think about the difference between the two? And just kind of trying to raise awareness for our kids, because I think they don't realize that it's not just about trying harder. It really is that their brain needs motivation, and they need to understand that for the long term.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Okay, great. Thank you. And then when he gets all hyper focused on this thing that he wants, and see, he can just pull it up on Amazon and see the picture. So then I should just have him maybe do the jumping jacks or something like that to kind of pull it back a little bit, like to get him out of that hyper focus.
So what is it that you typically do to help him break hyper-focus?
To help him break, I usually just let it kind of run its course and just let him kind of,
what's the downside of how you've been handling it, Tammy?
I guess there isn't one. It just takes a little bit longer.
Yeah, I guess it starts to wear on your nerves. At some point, I bet.
Yeah, that would be it. Yes, that's it. Oh gosh. Okay, but I can hang with that and do the other. So that's great. Oh, that's great. Thank you.
So, other thoughts, Pat or Carolyn?
This is Pat. I guess the big thing that's hard with my son is, like you said, finding a motivation for now versus longer term, you know, and breaking something down smaller. It's sometimes that's difficult.
So give me an example. You were talking about math and engagement and buy-in. What are some of the now motivators that you've tried to help him to roll up his sleeves a little bit on the math?
Okay, if you can get through this, you can have a snack or if you get your math done, you can have some TV time. I mean, we try some of that. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
What do you notice is different about the times that it works versus the times that it doesn't?
I think what we're seeing now is when he's really tired, it doesn't matter. He just he can't focus.
Yeah.
He can't. Yeah.
That doesn't matter how. So, yeah, so at some point he realized that there's no motivating exhaustion, and it's time to either, you know, drag through it or let it go. So if that may not be even about motivation at that point, it sounds like.
Well, that's on certain days, but just overall for him, and this started since January, I think it could be that the what they're doing is harder, it's new, it's harder, and he has problems with math. So, and so he's just getting frustrated, and at some point he's like, okay, this is wasting my time. I'd rather be doing something else. How do I get through this to move on? And we're trying to help him see if he doesn't do better, it's the it's going to be bad. So, I mean, he's got to get his grade up. So, and for some reason, he's not totally getting it. So,
So I asked you earlier, so when you get curious, what do you think is really going on?
I don't know if he's just, I'm not 100% sure, and neither are his teachers. We don't know. Their comments are he's just, he's not, they don't feel he's putting in quite as much effort as he did the first half of the year. But they can't say exactly why, and we can't figure out exactly why, other than maybe it's harder, he can't get it, he gets frustrated faster, and just, you know, doesn't want to fail. So if you don't try, you won't fail, you know.
Okay, so what if we pretend that that's what's really going on for him right now? He's demotivated because it's just really hard for him. If that was the case, how would you, what would you approach next?
If he's totally demotivated, I mean, the approach we're doing now is basically for him, what he needs is repetition. You know, in other words, he's got to hear the lesson twice, maybe then just one time. So unfortunately for him, it means more time doing math.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's increasing scaffolding, is that right?
Oh, yeah. He's got to go to more tutoring, and now he's got specific things he needs to do. In other words, when he does his math, he has to make sure it's all written down. No hurrying, no scribbling. Take your time, write it all down so that everybody can see what you're doing. So if you're doing it wrong, everybody can tell, you know. So those are some of the things. But, yes, he's got extra tutoring. The school's working with him. They're letting him go to tutor in the morning and stay longer and skip some morning work, you know. So we have things for him to do. I just, that, you know, one teacher said today, she said, I want to see some more effort out of him. So
what kind of conversation could you have about motivation and his brain with a teacher?
With the teacher or with him?
With the teacher.
Well, with the teacher, it's you know, I mean, he may be doing the best he can, you know, as long as, you know, she sees, I mean, if he's coming and he's doing it, and then that's maybe just the best he can do. So, I don't know. I mean, he got frustrated because he was worried about another class. And I, you know, my thing was, well, at least he was worried about something in school versus blowing it all off. And so, we're keep working with her and his regular teacher. It's his tutor that got a little frustrated with him. So,
yeah, because it sounds like, because I think that, Pat, I mean, you understand that it's not just about trying harder, and it's not, you know, it's really about kind of understanding, is this an intellect issue, is this an executive function issue, what's really going on and what scaffolding is needed. I guess my question is simply, you know, how much do you think it's just him putting in more effort?
Well, I think if he will concentrate and do these few things we're asking, I mean, and like, let's see for the next 2 weeks, do we all see, you know, that, because for us as parents, if we see that he is trying, even though maybe the results aren't perfect, but we see him saying the right things or thinking the right things, then that's good for us. Versus, you know, just trying to get it done. And I think it would be for them too, you know.
So focusing on the process rather than the outcome is what?
Right. Right now it's like, let's focus on the process, do these things, go to class, and if he will, you know, and if everyone feels like he's really trying to do the process, that's fine. And I think eventually we'll see some other things happen because of that. But if not, at least you can't fuss at him for trying. He's trying. He did what we asked. So, and that's what we're trying. We're trying to work out a reward system. If you do this stuff, then here's what we're going to do for you. In other words, we're not just making you do extra work. You're going to get something out of it too.
So how well is that working?
Well, we just started it. He just started extra stuff this week, and I actually wrote down a plan for him so he could see it and read it, and I've told him to come up with some rewards he wants, and we're going to come up with some, and we're going to see how it goes and then tweak it as we move along.
That makes sense. So just the thing that's kind of popping into my head as you're saying that, Pat, to just kind of keep an eye on. If it's not giving you the success that you want, it may be that the expectation may not be realistic, and you might need to go back and kind of add in some more scaffolding and figure that piece of it out.
Right. Okay. Awesome.
Okay, any other thoughts before we transition into our final questions? So I'm going to move on to page 47, and the last questions we ask at the end of each class are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What ahas did I have? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? So would love to hear from all three of you at least one aha and one action commitment.
This is Pat. I guess I'll go. My aha is you know, I guess, like you said, I got to make sure the reward makes sense, and he's moving toward the reward. Or, like you said, there's not something else going on that he'll never make it, and so the reward doesn't even make sense. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my aha, and then my action is to work on his rewards this week, and you know, kind of tweak them and see, you know, see what's working, and then monitor them like the next week and see how it goes.
Okay. Great. How's that feel?
Feels good. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. What's going to get in the way, Pat?
Well, I would say life, but you know, I mean, just trying to make sure, well, you know, because you got all this other school stuff, trying to make sure we stay focused on math is going to be a top priority for the next couple of weeks. So,
yeah, it's hard because there's always something else to, like Carolyn was saying earlier, there's always something else. So,
yeah,
good. All right, Tammy or Carolyn, who wants to go next?
My aha is that I have to, my aha is to it is to pass the baton on to him with this motivation kind of thing so he can come up with, well, so that he can realize what motivating his brain means. So I'm going to, that's my aha, and I need to have a conversation with him about that. Little by little throughout the week, I'll kind of pebble it in.
Cool.
Awesome. When we can talk.
Okay, how does that feel as a strategy for you to tackle?
That feels really good because I didn't really even notice that before, honestly. He was just really aggravating me. I mean, the whole thing with the, you know, it kind of got into, I want this now, I want this. It was just starting to really wear on me, actually. So, yeah, so this is good because I didn't even realize it. So, yeah. So, I know it feels great, actually.
So, Tammy, what was it about it that was really getting under your skin?
Because it was kind of a non, it was like an, if I said on Friday, I didn't mean on Wednesday. I mean, it was just kind of a, it was irritating because it was.
You had this great plan and he's blowing it up. Is that what you mean?
Well, it was like an everyday thing as soon as he got home. Okay, now I had a good day. Now I get this. No, well, no, no, no. We didn't, you know, and I'm not like that. I mean, you know, we don't go like that. We don't go out every day and buy something new. That's not what we do. And I mean,
so
it's
something up against a value for you.
Well,
so I guess the question is because if he needs motivation every day, but
yeah.
It's a value for you not to spend money on a big thing like that every day. What do you think you most need to do to try to identify some other things that are maybe not monetary that could be equally motivating?
Well, I mean, I would have some little surprises for him, like, you know, little special things he could eat, you know, and like, you know, little things here and there, you know, but not like a big thing he was working towards. It's the big thing that he was like really interested in. So he can, you know, we just need to have a conversation about that. So we will do that, and that's great. So,
sounds good.
Yeah, because, I mean, in our house, we don't do that. And he said, well, so-and-so does this and so. And I said, well, you don't live there. And I'm not their mother. You live here. So, and then he always tells me that God made a big mistake putting him here. He should have put him with that other family that gets all that big stuff. And I said, well, I don't think he did. You know, and then it just kind of goes from there. So,
yeah,
I mean,
and that pushes every button.
He does have sweet comebacks for certain things, but no, this is great. So we'll just have that conversation. And I didn't even realize it, so it's a great thing. So thank you.
Good, good, good. All right. Pat, or Carolyn, what about you? And you're on mute, so if you need me to unmute you. There you go.
Am I unmuted now?
You are unmuted now.
Okay, that's it. The big aha that I'm having is, yes, the brain needs motivation, you know, knowing it with our children, with their brains and whatever. But somehow what I'm hearing from everybody is this sense it may not be me that needs to do all the motivating. In fact, it's like really bad if I am the motivator, because I think what you were saying before is our objective is to be able to have them self-motivate. Anyway, just it gives me pause as I'm prioritizing what things I have to get to, because they are my job and it is what I'm supposed to, you know, it is essential for me to do this versus, is that something everybody likes it when I do? But they ought to be able and willing to do it for themselves or for me.
Well, no, I think that's a great question to ask, and that's that constant ladder of independence. And so I think you balance that against realistic expectations, right? And so that was to check back in and say, is it realistic that they're at that point either today because they're having a rough day or because of their age or development or whatever it is? So I think that's a great aha. What do you want to do with it?
I think that is just another tool that I can, or another filter that I can run my priority list through, you know what I mean? My planning and what can I realistically take on, or what do I have to let go of? If I could run things through that kind of a filter where, no, I don't really, I'm no longer
you know, the age of my children, the age of my husband. I am not responsible for all of their motivation. And anyway, it just feels like it frees up. I don't know. It just makes it more funner to think through the things that need to get done and not like this big chore.
There you go. Love that. Awesome. All right, ladies, great call tonight. Just a reminder that we've got 2 weeks now between now and the next PSS call. Elaine and I are on spring break the first week in April, and so we'll be off. Next week there is a office hours lifeline call, so join us there, and we will be back in PSS the week of April 10th. So we'll see you then.
Great. Have a wonderful
day. Thanks, everybody.
Vacation.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.